92FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for kicking our Wednesday afternoon off in perfect fashion. It is Wednesday, the 23rd of March. You're listening to Game On. I'm Shane Dawson, and coming up this evening, we'll hear from the Irish and Ukrainian football fans who are doing their bit in the time of need. Along with that, we'll have David Snade on all of today's other football news as the bidding for Euro 2028 takes a late twist. In ladies football, Nadine Doherty will join us to dissect Donegal's shock win over the Dubs. Aoife Murray will be live chatting Camogie as the Division 1 finalists are decided. And in tennis, Stephen Higgins assesses the shock retirement of world number one Ash Barty. If you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Yes, it is great to have your company wherever you are tuning in from on this Wednesday evening, and an action-packed show to get through in the company of David Snade and Nadine Doherty. Folks, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the football chat, the ladies football chat, the camogie and indeed the tennis, Nadine Doherty, you marched into the studio with a big smile on your face. We will get into it in more detail a little bit later on, but have you come down from the high of Donegal's win over Dublin?
Oh, Ron, unbelievable. I have to be honest, I was actually at a wedding on Saturday, so
you weren't even there.
Yeah, I didn't even get to see the game in real time.
Just ring the phone out of the table.
Oh, listen, do you know what? It reminded me of being at Electric Picnic a number of years ago when the men beat Dublin with those couple of goals in that quarter final or semi final. So I was getting the text over and then got to watch it the next day. But they're incredible. We will get into it later, but just for that group of girls and Yvonne Bonner coming back and girls like that, you know, it was the old heads who came to the fore at the end, but so many younger players who did their job so brilliantly throughout the game. And look, we'll dissect it later, but yeah, I've been walking on air for the week.
I'd say, in fairness, I'd say that's the ideal cure for day two of a wedding is starting off.
Yeah.
There's been many, I think I was at a wedding in Wicklow when the Dublin Mayo replay of the All-Ireland final, but it coincided well that the speeches were on at the same time. So as David said, you could have the phone under the table and keep an eye on, but there were a few rogue kind of cheers and roars midway through the father of the groom's speech or something. However, we will get into a bit of association football chat as well, but I suppose the news breaking in the last while, we will chat Euro 2028 and UEFA have released that later on, David. But Jimmy Dunn, James Talbot are called into the Ireland squad. Mark Travers goes back to his club with an injury. And as we knew, Daryl Lenihan yesterday departed as well.
I know. And as always, somebody has taken to social media who is not quite happy with this, or apparently wasn't quite happy. So Darren Randolph was tweeting, on Instagram when this was put up by the FAI, that James Thomas of Bohemians had been called in and said something about, like, is he too old? You know, he hasn't retired yet.
Yeah, I think he had the waving emoji. He's like, I'm still here, guys.
In fairness, like, he probably has to remind people that he is still around because he hasn't played football this season. You know, we had a chance to go out on loan and maybe get some minutes, and it never happened. And then he kind of rolled back on things a little bit and was just saying that it was just banter. Which is kind of cold for saying this didn't quite go as I was expecting. People are kind of realising, well, hold on, we have Quevian Kelleher, we have Gavin Bazunu, Mark Travers, who is at the moment the best goalkeeper in the championship, the most clean sheets, is going to be a Premier League goalkeeper next year. He drops out, and then just like what happened for the World Cup qualifiers last year when he also picked up an injury, Stephen Kenny turns to James Talbot, who, being in the team of the year for in the League of Ireland with Bohemians, has done exceptionally well. And it was funny because I just had flashbacks when he got called in the last time, when people think that professional footballers live these like glamorised lives. When he got called up as an emergency player last time, he wasn't flown out in a private jet, he was in the front row of a Ryanair flight with the rest of us. So
at least it was the front row.
Yeah, so
you get the extra leg room then.
Yeah, in fairness, I don't think he'd be getting the bus out to Abbottstown for the base. Now he might be able to get a taxi sorted out for them, but listen, like, it's just another indication of passing in the guard. Like, Darren Randolph was an exceptional servant for Irish football. I don't think anybody would forget, like, that debut when he came on as a substitute. When you forget, he came on as a substitute against Germany, world champions, and set up that goal for Shane Long with that kick. And then after that, with the Euros in 2016. But the game moves on, and yeah, like Jimmy Dunn as well, which is, that's actually an interesting call up, because in years gone by, this would be a fella who was now a regular in the Championship and would be nailed on for every squad. But such is the depth of talent we have now as centre back. This is a lad and who is kind of on the periphery a little bit, so this is a great opportunity for him in these friendlies to actually make a bit of an impact, because it's something that Stephen Kenny has spoken about, and maybe I might get into, I know we're going into it a little bit later on about stuff that's gone on with Michael Obafemi and not taking the call up when it came. But he spoke in particular in relation to, say, Will Keane, a fella who has come in around friendly camps who hadn't been in before and made a really positive impression and showed what he can do in training, and that stuck to him. And I think for Jimmy Dunn this could be a huge opportunity.
Yes, indeed it will be, and very unfortunate for Daryl Lenihan, because he was going so well for his
another example.
It is very, very cruel. Sticking on the topic of football, we move our attention and we welcome into the conversation John O'Neill and Bill Prokopic. John O'Neill from You Boys in Green, and Bill, who is an Irish resident and who will captain a Ukraine fans team, and he will captain a Ukraine fans team in a You Boys in Green Ireland fans match versus Ukraine fans this Friday at 7:30 up in Home Farm on the north side of Dublin in Whitehall. Capacity is 2,000, but you can also donate by buying a virtual ticket, or indeed you can attend the match. Gentlemen, a smashing cause up in Whitehall. John, if I come to you first, just I suppose to give it the big sell, I'm sure I've missed a few details there as to how this came about and how you can actually attend this match Friday evening.
Yeah, thanks, Shane. Just by way of context, I suppose about 10 years ago, a number of Ireland fans went over to compete at a Eurofan tournament in Lviv in Ukraine. We went back five or six times since then and made a lot of friends there in Ukraine. And sort of like everyone, I suppose, sort of devastated to see what's going on at the moment. So that's where this idea came from, to set up this fans game, because effectively that's how we know a lot of people in Ukraine. So Home Farm have been very supportive from us. Future ticketing have got involved, waived all fees. The FAI have supported it. The Chris Supporters Club have got behind it. And local schools and politicians as well. So there's no League of Ireland on Friday night, so anybody who's around, please come down. You can get tickets on YBIG.ie, that is. We'll have an Irish band afterwards, and we're looking forward to the Ukrainian singers that will be there for the national anthems. And also, we'll have a number of Ukrainian refugees who are already in the country, so we're going to kind of use it as a sort of integration event as well.
That's brilliant. A really, really good cause as well. And you can buy virtual tickets as well. So if you can't attend, you can still donate. I'm right in saying that?
That's correct. Yeah, you can get virtual tickets to the same price as €10. All money going to the Red Cross Ukraine campaign, who will get that money over to them straight away. We're kind of seeing this as a sort of the sporting community's contribution to this whole thing within Ireland. YBIG.ie virtual or match ticket if you can't make it down. We also have corporate tickets available for €100. If any companies are out there would like to support it, that'd be great as well.
Okay, good stuff. Bill, I did introduce you saying that you'd be Ukrainian captain, but I'm told you mightn't actually be playing, so I'll rephrase that as honorary Ukrainian captain there. If you could tell us a bit about how the Ukrainian community has banded together and come about in playing this match.
Thanks, Roger. A couple of weeks ago, the lads from YBIG ran us, and I called a Dublin-based Ukrainian team called Dynamo, and the lads, especially Roman Prima and Sergei Shchenko, just jump in the boat straight away, you know, because it's very valuable for us, you know, to see what happens and how Irish people are trying to help us. And that would be the direct input of Ukrainian society, but we got a major help from Ukrainian embassy, the church, Ukrainian Church of Ireland, the volunteers, stuff there for different things that we actually got in for this game.
And Dennis Lukens is also on the line as well. Dennis, you'll be coaching the Ukrainian team, and you're currently based in Galway. You've just arrived after a fairly frenetic journey to get to Ireland. No, we may have just lost Dennis there, unfortunately. Bill, if I come back to yourself, in terms of the spirit of the Ukrainian, kind of the team that will be playing, you're obviously kind of a very close-knit group. And is it a case of that this is hopefully one of possibly a couple of fundraising events that we might see you bring together?
Well, in fairness, we look at this more like a shaking a wave across the Europe, you know, maybe trying to inspire other people and other cities to do something like that, you know, because although the football and the politics is only a tool, but it's the one way you're using it. So, of course, we're looking forward. Of course, we like to do more of those games. Of course, we like involvement of more people, companies. So that's pretty much the way we're looking at it.
And, John, this is a regular in terms of you boys in green playing fan matches against opposition nations and so on. This is, we've seen this happen before, not perhaps in terms of the reason and the rationale behind this one, but it is something that's not dissimilar or not unfamiliar for yourself in playing these sort of matches.
It is, yeah. It's quite a frequent event for us, depending on who we're playing. And actually, the most recent interaction we had with somebody was Oleg from Ukraine, when Ireland were due, easy to forget now, Ireland were due to go to Lviv in June to play the senior team over in Lviv, and we had arranged a game with the Ukrainian team. And a week later, the war had started, and the same guy who messaged me is now protecting himself with all, basically joining the army effectively to defend his city with somewhere else. So, and this guy really friendly, anyone you can think of, it could be any of us really under attack from this. So it just has really, really hit home. But yeah, that's how we got to know them effectively through these fans games.
And for yourself, Bill, I suppose just like looking at this in terms of what's the kind of numbers that you expect to be there, and how proactive has the campaign been so far?
Well, campaign been proactive, but unfortunately a lot of people, a lot of Ukrainians are spread all around the island, you know, so we can't predict the numbers. We're trying to reach the highest number, of course, but it is difficult to say exact numbers. So we're hoping we're going to get as close as possible to full capacity. But it's going to be what it's going to be. Like when I'm saying, Friday night, unfortunately, a lot of people working, and I can't guarantee.
Yeah, but it is a case of kind of there will be a strong element there. I believe Dennis joins us now. Dennis, unfortunately, we lost you a bit earlier on. I was just mentioning you're based in Galway at the moment. You're going to be managing the Ukrainian team on Friday evening, and you've had a very hectic journey to get to Ireland, I believe. Dennis, no, unfortunately
well,
not.
Well, yes, I mean,
sorry.
Look, I don't want to complain because I'm lucky. You know, we escaped the war in Ukraine about 3 weeks ago, and we're now, you know, sitting in a nice hotel in Galway, so we can't complain. We did, you know, in Nikolaev, Ukraine, you know, the first day of the war, they sent cruise missiles to the military airport near my house, and I woke up to my house shaking. And then I went to get gas to go to the border, and a cruise missile went over my head over the gas station. So we left. We just packed two knapsacks and a suitcase, and we picked up my nephew and my son and my wife, and we drove to the Moldovan, through Transnistria, actually, which is Russian-controlled, then through Moldova. And then we went on to Romania, then we went to Turkey, and now this morning we landed in Ireland. So, you know, I can't call myself a refugee, even though we lived in Ukraine for 11 years. My wife was born there. My son was born in Ukraine, and I lived there 11 years. But my son and I are both Irish citizens, and my wife did not claim refugee status because we're able to support ourselves. I don't want to take money from the Irish government if I don't need to.
And what part of Ukraine were you living in, and will you be looking to relocate back here now to Ireland for the foreseeable future?
Well, so we lived for 11 years in the south of Ukraine, a place called Nikolaev, and it's just up from Kherson, where there's Nikolaev seems to be holding themselves well and pushing. Our soldiers, you know, our heroic soldiers are pushing the Russians back in Nikolaev, but Kherson's got a lot of trouble. So I have a beautiful house that I built there. I don't know if we're ever going to be able to go back. I don't want to get into the politics of it all, but even if we win, and I think, and Ukraine will win, you know, we will push them out. You know, what you gonna, you know, if this fellow's, you know, the president of Russia is still around, you know, 10 years from now, he'll do the same thing again, I imagine. So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm, you know, my mother left Ireland 100 years ago, approximately, my late mother. I love Ireland, and, you know, I'm Irish myself, so it's likely we'll live here and relocate here.
Hi, Bill, just to come back to it's Davis Knight here. I was just, like, listening to what you were saying there. I just wonder, like, is it too flippant to say with this game and the importance of the match and just being around people and being able to play football and just have that experience of just being able to, I don't know, just bring some relief? Is that something that for this is one of the main, obviously the goal here is raising money, but for you and for what your people are going through at the moment, is that something that is just looking forward to having that sense of relief on Friday?
Well, it's, playing a football always been a sense of relief. I'm using that for years, you know, that's because for that hour I'm playing a football, my head is clear. You know, that's the one time I can regenerate in my head, not thinking about anything, just, you know, enjoy what you're doing. And that's most of the football players or football fans would say to you. But in this particular case, it is a relief and not, because in this case, as I said before, you know, we do want to kind of bring the attention to this matter, because, lads, we're in 24th century. Why do we have to decide a matter by the military means? And that's all it is. It's more of a political, but it's the football being used as a good tool to bring in the attention of the people. And that's what I have to say on that subject.
Yeah, no, even just speaking about it, even as we're talking about it, obviously, like, the fact of what the occasion is with the game, obviously, it's a great cause, but then you listen to your guys speak, and, like, even, like John, when you were talking about, I think you mentioned Oleg there, and the kind of the strength of, say, feelings and the links that you guys would have with fans in the Ukraine, it just kind of shows the depth of feeling that football supporters can kind of generate throughout the world.
Well, football has united all of the world. I mean, that's one of the best ways when you come into a different country and you're trying to find some of your friends or integrate the society. For me, the best way is to find a football pitch. You go, you always find the good people. You always find the friends. You always find the contact that will help you in your life in this country. That's one of the best ways to meet new people and make friends.
And I think, David, just on sorry, Bill, just on that point, David. Without football, without that tournament, that was the first time we were all in Ukraine. So this introduced us to this country, which is seems far away, but it's actually so close to how we are in terms of sense of humor, everything like us. So, Lviv is a lovely, really welcoming city. All the people, it's a beautiful city, and this football tournament that we went to kind of brought us there, and that has really brought it home of what is happening now. So we're trying to just kind of celebrate the connection between Ukraine and Ireland with this match. And there's probably going to be a lot more Ukrainians coming here. I know there's an estimation of maybe 200,000. So I think it's important that they're integrated as much as possible. And they love football just like us. So I think this is a perfect example to kind of embrace that and enhance that as much as possible.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. Gentlemen, John, my final question just to yourself, just in terms of for anyone attending. So it kicks off at 7:30, but we encourage people to get down a bit early, mingle around, and there'll be not entertainment, there'll be a few events on afterwards as well.
Yeah, there will. Look, there'll be lots going on. We have some great singers lined up to sing both the Ukrainian national anthem and the Irish national anthem. We have a band on afterwards, Catalpa, great Irish band. We also have a Ukrainian singer who's going to sing a couple of songs in the bar afterwards. We'll be selling tea and coffee and cakes, with everything all going towards the Red Cross in Ukraine. Bars will be open from 6:00, so it's a Friday night. No League of Ireland on, or no Premier Division anyway, so... if anyone's around to get down, and there'll be lots of entertainment and lots of things for kind of kids as well. That it'll be kind of kid friendly, but also there'll be two bars open as well. So YBIG.ie for anyone that can make it down or get a virtual ticket. We'd really appreciate it.
Brilliant. Well, listen, John O'Neill, Bill Prokopek and Dennis Lukens, thank you very much for taking the time to chat to us. And as John mentioned there, it is this Friday evening. There's no League of Ireland games on in Dublin. The closest one to Dublin is in Bray. So if you are in the area, it's a really nice stadium in Home Farm. I've been up there many times as well. So Friday evening, kickoff at 7:30. And it's for a really, really good cause. We've tweeted out on Game On 2FM on Twitter for further details. And you can go on to the YBIG website. That's yb.ie for further details. So John, Bill, Dennis, thank you very much, and indeed very best of luck with it, because as I said, it is a fantastic cause. Okay, we are going to stay on the topic of football, and David Snaith will run down all the news headlines in just a few minutes time. Stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Football.
Hello, once again, you're very welcome back to Game On Live on 2FM. I'm Shane Dawson in the company of David Snaith as we turn our attention to Association Football. David, lots to chat about. Where to start? I suppose let's get straight in. UEFA released a press release just before we came on air. So there's been a lot of news today and indeed yesterday about the Euro 2028 bid that obviously affects Ireland. Ireland are heavily involved in it. So the UEFA statement says, UEFA today confirmed that it has received declarations of interest to host the 2028 and 2032 editions of the UEFA Euro from four potential bidders following the deadline of the 23rd of March. A joint declaration of interest was submitted by the Football Associations of England, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, Scotland and Wales for UEFA Euro 2028. And this is the strange part, I suspect. Russia and Turkey declared their interest in hosting either the 2028 or 2032 edition of UEFA's flagship national team competition, while Italy announced its intention to bid for UEFA Euro 2032. The appointment of host or hosts of Euro 2028 and Euro 2032 will be made in September 2023. So a lot of numbers there. So listen, we all knew that the UK and Ireland were going in for the bid. The thing that's thrown a lot of people today is the emergence of Turkey and indeed Russia.
Yeah, there had been mention of Turkey obviously before this. Turkey had been kind of in the ballpark to be involved, but they seem to have actually come out of running and now they're back in. Like yesterday and even today when it was announced, it seemed as if this was the one bid. It was going to be the Irish bid with the associations in the UK, with Northern Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales. And it just seemed as if that was it, that it could have even been expedited and would have been done by April the 7th when they say the UEFA committee would have been meeting. Because, like, as it stands now, the fact that Russia have decided to say that they have an interest in 2028 or 2032, it's just hard to fathom considering everything that's gone on in the world, I suppose, like considering that, like, Russian clubs and obviously the national teams are, like, they're currently suspended by FIFA and UEFA, obviously considering what's happened with the invasion of the Ukraine and the war that's happening there. And then there's obviously, I think that's kind of just going to be, like, that's pending on an outcome on an appeal with the Court of Arbitration for Sport. But on the face of it looking, it just seems hard to comprehend how it could even be considered, considering it's obviously currently suspended, and it's just going to maybe prolong the process. Like yesterday and even today, you're kind of, from an Irish point of view, you're thinking, why is our Ireland getting involved in this when there's so much else that needs to happen in Irish football? And I know that's something that's been covered before. And then when the fact that there was no other bidders and was no one else involved, you're thinking, well, it's relatively straightforward, so it shouldn't be hopefully an added expense in terms of actually getting this over the line and the work that would need to be done for that. And then this now, just truthfully, don't know what happens next. Obviously there's going to be a process where I think it'd be September when it'll actually be confirmed. Yeah. But it's just now a case of actually waiting to see, well, what happens? Do they actually bid for 2028? Will they put together? It just seems so disgraceful, really. Yeah. That it's something that we're even talking about now. But yeah, it's just considering yesterday and even this morning when obviously the press releases were going out from government and from the FAI about it, it just seems as if it was full steam ahead, and now this has happened.
Yeah, no, it is ridiculous. And you'd imagine that the UK and Ireland for Euro 28 at least will go ahead. Whatever about Euro 32 with Italy thereabouts, and if Turkey might be in the running. But yeah, I suppose with Russia now throwing their oar in.
But you know what, even there, like, we were talking to the lads even previously, and you're listening to them and what they're going and what they're talking about and the feeling and of just a little bit of despair and the relief that football's bringing, and we're talking about this now, it just makes you feel disgusting. Like,
yeah, no, it is. And you mentioned there, even probably a discussion for another day about stadiums and where matches might be played. Like, I mean, London's Wembley Stadium would be the obvious favourite to host the final, while any number of Premier League stadia fit the bill. The Aviva Stadium in Croke Park in Dublin, the Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Hampden Park in Glasgow would also likely to feature, while Northern Ireland is also keen to host matches. A redeveloped Casement Park could be one option, but nothing was ruled out by the Irish Football Association, their chief executive, Patrick Nelson. And I think John Fogarty had a tweet during the week as well, just about the amount of matches that are played in Croke Park in the summer. And we talk about revamped championship formats and everything else, so it's going to be very difficult logistically to get matches over the line, and not to mention then the elephant in the room of the League of Ireland and the stadiums and facilities. Well, Stephen Kenny spoke very well during the week as well about, I suppose, kind of disconnecting the two.
Well, it's a case of, well, I'm looking at the clock here now, so it's about 6:30. We could be here until 6:30 in the morning, like, we'd sit here and do a marathon session and we can go through it, but obviously I won't. But like, Stephen Kenny spoke yesterday and he was talking about that these two things can't coexist in the one sphere whereby the structures can be put in place and developments can be put in place of what happens to Irish football, because obviously as part of the review with the FAI that's now happening over the next year with the League of Ireland, but also tournaments can be held and they can try and have their mark. And obviously you think about Euro 2020, there would have been games in the Aviva. Now that's slightly different in the sense of there would have been limited, fewer games, because it was going to be played all over Europe. This is a case of, and you mentioned John Fogarty's fee, I actually replied to it, because if you're looking at Ireland's, the FAI's kind of readiness to actually be involved in this, and yet you're going to be relying on a statement from a stadium from a different code that then impacts on that schedule and people, that's setting aside of what's happening with facilities inside the League of Ireland, just in general. If one of the stadiums needed for the bid isn't even one that belongs to you, what does that say about like where we're at? But when you actually create it, then when you think about the excitement, and when you think about the, not just because it was around COVID and what was happening at the time, but when you think about, there was that little bit of excitement about the fact that there would have been games played, obviously less so with the fact that Ireland didn't qualify, but there would have been games played and you would have got a chance to maybe see these big players. That's when it gets closer. But like, if there's nothing prolonged that's left afterwards in terms of a legacy, and that's some of the buzzwords that so many use, but like, if there's nothing there afterwards, then what's the point? This has been a team over the last number of months. We've been coming in and chatting this, and it's like I say, like, Nadine's head's probably wrecked with me going off on the same tangent, on the same tangents all the time, because I fully feel as if I'm saying the same things all the time. But when you see the growth of, say, the club game and international football, and people talking about, well, what's inspired them, but it's not so much that it's these one-off tournaments that will inspire generations of young Irish players in the future, and if it can provide social benefits in the future, then great for certain areas. But the worry is that it doesn't often tend to happen that way, and that the money that's talked about doesn't actually flow down and trickle down and improve where it should do. So it's just, listen, we'll probably be talking about this again next week, and I'll be here to talk about it next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Good forward sell for yourself. We're going to have to book you now. But yeah, no, you're dead right, because in terms of politicians mentioning this could pave the way for a revamped Terryland Park or Turner's Cross or whatever else. But the biggest loser if sports events take up the summer billing in Croke Park, Garth Brooks. So... and other musical events, of course. Listen, David, sticking with the Ireland narrative, obviously Ireland are preparing for matches against Belgium and Lithuania. You had a really nice piece on the 42.ie about Troy Parrott, Michael Obafemi and Aaron Connolly. Three Irish youngsters, all striving for the same goal, but facing different challenges.
Yeah, I suppose it's nice to be able to talk about footballers as well now here, you know. That was just an interesting one over the course of, like, what happened, say, around last week when... Jim Crawford was obviously named the under-21 squad, and he kind of made the point that Michael Obafemi, who obviously would have began his career in the Premier League with Southampton, has had terrible problems with hamstring injuries and has fought his way back in to really actually keep on having a career, because like the type of player he is, that explosive player, like they could have really damaged his career, but he's done flying at Swansea. And he made the point that Michael Obafemi didn't want to be considered for the under-21s because he saw himself as a senior player. And you're kind of thinking, well, do you know what? Like, fair play, the honesty to actually be up front and say that. And then when Stephen Kenny then named the squad, I think it was a couple of days later on Friday, and he spoke about how he wanted to bring Michael Obafemi into the squad, but that he felt, because of where his body was at and the anxiety he felt around it, he just didn't feel it was the right time. And you're kind of thinking, the initial reaction is, it's kind of like, ooh, like, you say you want to be a senior player, you want, he's tweeted out frustrations before when he hadn't been named in squads, and yet the opportunity comes and he doesn't take it. But then over the course of the day, he was listening to Troy Parris speak during the week. It was very, very interesting. Again, like another fellow who obviously left Dublin at the age of like 14, 15, signed for Spurs, but very upfront about saying that, you know what, like, he's realised that to be a professional footballer is not going to be as easy as it was when he was 15, 16, 17 and flying it and coming through the age groups at Tottenham, and it wasn't a bother to him. He was like way above, and then as soon as he got into that first team environment and now on loan at MK Dons, he's realised that, like, you get one chance at this, you have to put the effort in, you have to put the work in. And then tying that in with Aaron Connolly, who has been part of Stephen Kenny's plans over the last campaign, would have been brought in by Mick McCarthy before that, and, like, to borrow a phrase from Micah Richards, burst onto the scene in the Premier League when he scored those two goals against Spurs, actually, for Brighton. And there's been so much high hopes for him. But then you look at what's happened with him, and again, a few little injuries, loss of form, kind of having issues in terms of, like, dealing with the pressure of what comes with being a professional footballer. And it kind of makes you realise that, like, what Troy Parrott is talking about, of having that understanding and appreciation for the opportunity he has, like, it makes you realise that, you know what, we'll give a couple of these lads that little bit of time. So, like, Michael Obafemi, there'd be people there probably raging, what's he doing not taking a call up if he was given it? But, like, if he's at a point where he doesn't feel he's physically able to actually do it, well, just give him that little bit of a break. If he wants to actually make sure he has a career, and which could have already been taken away from him because of the injuries he's had, and there's also been stuff around his professionalism, which I think he's getting to grips with now. Because, like, think about it, he's still only 21 years of age, he's been in the Premier League since he was a teenager, the focus that comes under you. And the same with Aaron Connolly, you know, he's got a heel issue. Like, again, like, he's 22, I think, in the summer, or just gone 22, and he's not training every week. He can't even train every day. And he's playing, just, he's getting from game to game on loan at Middlesbrough. And it makes you realise of what these lads go through on a weekly basis. And yet, when it comes to Ireland, because it's like, especially with the media over here, and when the Irish team comes, it's the main big show in town, and you couldn't think, you see what James McLean does, where he literally ended up getting thrown out of Stoke City because he was turned up for games and did get injured and went against his club wishes. But that's a player who's a senior international at this point, and like a senior career behind him, and has that ability to be able to actually stand up to a manager. Whereas young lads who are still finding their way in the game, I think how Stephen Kenny is managing it is pretty much spot on. It's just giving that little bit of leeway now, a little bit early, and then bit by bit, then you'll be expecting more demands of them as they maybe grow into their careers a bit more.
Yeah, and unfortunately Michael Obafemi has been savaged by injuries and hamstring injuries as well, so it's very difficult. But you mentioned there young lads. Yes, they're footballers, but they are young lads, so it is important to give them time. And we see plenty of young talent coming through in the League of Ireland. 6 different League of Ireland clubs currently have goalkeepers on international duty. I had to mention that because it's the League of Ireland, it's goalkeepers. It's my two loves.
You're talking about the United Churches League next.
Yeah, quite possibly. Final football question, though, just stepping away from Ireland. Very briefly, it is reported that Erik ten Hag would be in line for a possible interview for the Man United job. So obviously the discussion
He's already had it, hasn't he? It on Monday. I think it was yesterday. Sorry, but like, and it was even interesting. You mentioned there, but Nadine bursting in the door with a big smile on her face because of Donegal. But even like Stephen, the producer there, assumes, what's going on with Ten Hag? And I was saying, well, I'll be honest, like, I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. But like, you speak to people who obviously cover that beat at Manchester United, and you kind of get a sense of like how this is coming out already, that a manager is being interviewed at this stage of the process. There's a couple of things at play here. Is this Ten Hag's camp thinking, right, we've got an opportunity to get our man into Old Trafford here, we put the pressure on, make sure everyone knows that he's been interviewed for it? Or is them also maybe alerting other potential suitors that you could lose him? Because it's well worth reading. There's a great profile of Ten Hag and how he works and how he operates in the London Independent by Mark Critchley. And it just kind of, if you read it, you're thinking, do not go near Manchester United. This is not the club for you. Like, this is a coach who excels in an environment that's built around where he can just focus on coaching and getting the best out of players and not having to deal with the absolute circus that is Manchester United when you have a technical director like Darren Fletcher who's getting yellow carded during a Champions League game when you're getting knocked out, and you've got an interim manager, Ralph Rangnick, who's talking about, he doesn't even know what your technical director is doing. So it just strikes that, and just chatting there, like, that timing, like, so much seems to have worked against United down through the years since Ferguson in terms of who they've gone for. And like, is Ten Hag that up and coming manager you want to get, who could be the next Klopp, could be the next Pep Guardiola, considering the success he's had at Ajax? But then you look at what's happening at United, and it just feels as if it needs it needed someone who was battle hardened and experienced, and like Luis Enrique takes all those boxes in terms of what he's done at Barcelona and the success he has there, and that understanding of dealing with a massive club that can go through kind of, if you look at the kind of the transitions that he would have been through with Barcelona and then obviously with Spain now as well. But again, going back to FIFA and the politics of football, the fact that this World Cup is now happening in December and not the summer means that possibly the right man for the job won't take it.
Well, it will be a conversation that will be trundling on for weeks to come.
Next week.
And you'll be in next week as well. You've already booked yourself. So you'll be in to see if it's Poch, if it's Ten Hag. Thomas Tuchel has also been mentioned as well. Who knows? So plenty to discuss in football going forward. Also, just before we do end the conversation, Katie McCabe is in action in Champions League action this evening. Her Arsenal side are taking on Wolfsburg from 8 p.m. And there's one Women's Super League match. Chelsea and Tottenham has been called off for a second time due to COVID-19, so hopefully that is not a frequent event across the board now in sport. But from Association Football to Ladies Gaelic Football, Nadine Doherty will be up next.
RTE 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now it is time to turn our attention to the Lidl National Leagues. Nadine Doherty is still in studio. So Nadine, reigning All-Ireland Senior Champions Meath will meet Donegal in what promises to be a gripping 2022 Lidl National Leagues Division 1 final at Croke Park on Sunday, April 10th. We'll be previewing that in the coming days and weeks. It looks set to be a repeat of last year's All-Ireland decider and a thrilling recent league tie. But Donegal shocked holders Dublin at St Tiernach's Park in Clonus with two goals in the space of just 24 seconds. Meath, however, avoided any potential upset as they saw off Mayo in the second semi-final on Saturday. So I suppose only one place to start, and that is indeed, as we talked about at the start of the show, Donegal defeating Dublin. How pleasing is the manner of that victory, that they didn't let the heads drop, that they persevered, they looked down and out when Nicole Owen stuck that point over, but then they bounced back with a couple of goals?
Yeah, you know, obviously, as fans, we were delighted with the manner at the end in which they did it. But, you know, watching it back, there was huge trust in that performance. You could see it within the Donegal team. There was trust in the process. There was trust in the management team. There was trust in each other. excuse me. There was a huge trust in Roisin McCafferty, the goalkeeper. And she's made a massive addition to that Donegal squad this year. I think there were a number of reasons why Donegal won it. I think tactically, Maxi Curran outsmarted Mick Bowen in a number of areas. I don't think Dublin expected Geraldine McLaughlin to be playing out around the middle. They would have always put Leah Caffrey on her, and I think that was genius by Maxi to bring Geraldine out the field, because last year in the corresponding fixture, I suppose Dublin fouled Geraldine for most of the game, so she wasn't a goal threat. So bringing her out, Maxi left that Dublin full back line exposed, and you know, we saw what happened. Another reason were the kickouts. Donegal pushed right up on the Dublin kickouts and they got their just desserts at the end. But watching the match back, I mean, they really, really rattled Dublin from the very first kickout. So that seed of doubt was sown earlier on, and lucky Vaughan capitalised at the end. And I suppose I just felt that aside from Dublin's purple patch, say that third quarter, I thought Donegal were more composed. I really did. They should have been up by more in the first half, for definite. Like, Dublin's, out of their 1-2 in the first half, 1-1 came directly from Donegal mistakes. I know Mick Bowen at the end said that Dublin were in complete control, and how did they lose it? Dublin never looked in complete control, and I'd question, you know, if they were, why was Carla Rowe coming on at half time? You know, Carla Rowe's their trump card.
Yeah.
You only bring Carla Rowe on if you feel you're struggling or you have to close the game out. So I just thought Donegal thoroughly deserved it, and fair play to them.
Was Mick Bowen putting on a bit of a brave face, perhaps? I asked a question there about what will the manner of that victory do for Donegal, but on the flip side of that, conceding two goals in less than 30 seconds and kind of losing the match in that way, how annoyed and how difficult will that be for Dublin to respond? Because that's a big loss in an All-Ireland final last year, and now not making a league final as well.
Yeah, and Mick tried to put on a brave face, but you could see he was absolutely fuming. And yeah, you know, it's two games where big questions were asked, and Dublin didn't answer, especially in those closing minutes. I don't think it'll take too much from them, and I just think with Dublin and Donegal, Dublin have something about Donegal that rattles them. Donegal beat them in 2019 in the league. They've come close the last few years. And just to go back to earlier, actually, another reason why I do think Donegal won. Donegal went head-to-head with Dublin on the free count this time. You know, again, going back to the last corresponding fixture, Dublin had way more frees. They stopped Donegal very, very early and high up the pitch. Donegal did the exact same thing. Both teams had 30-plus frees. Gus Chapman was blown for everything, not flashing yellow cards. So Donegal were able to delay Dublin. And Dublin, I suppose, weren't able to adapt. And I think that will worry Mick Bohan a little bit. But look, we've already acknowledged he's a fantastic coach. Mm. I don't think it'll rattle them too much. They'll be back. But listen, it's brilliant for Donegal. It's nearly a monkey off their back. And as I said last week, it's always Dublin who they aim to beat. So that's a huge, huge lift for the girls. And we're very proud of them all.
It was a more straightforward win for Meath in their semi-final then, and although they did trail by 3 points at half time, and I wasn't at the match, but I was reporting on it for news, and I was watching them, and it seemed to be very wind affected. Well, there was a stiff breeze in Clonus, so last year's Division 2 champions were just too strong in the second half. Goals from Orla Lally and Kelsey Nesbitt securing a 2-12 to 1-9 success. So this journey that Meath are on continues.
Yeah, the machine keeps going. You know, they were by no means convincing, and we've spoken already this year that they haven't hit the heights of last year yet, but when the chips were down, they were able to turn it around. As you said, the wind, look, it was a massive factor, two contrasting halves. But I think Mayo, you know, they will be ruined, missed opportunities. You know, they scored 7 points in that first half. I felt they could have added 2-4. They could have been up by a lot more. And they just had a lot of unforced errors, especially in that last quarter. Huge turning point in that quarter. Aiving Cleary made an unbelievable block, and that catapulted Meath up the pitch, and they scored 2-2 in 5 minutes. Emma Duggan, while I think she was carrying an injury that she got in the warm-up, she wasn't phenomenal from general play, but 4 points. Two of her 4 points were absolutely incredible. And look, when Meath went up by those few points, they were able to drop back, go a little bit super defensive for those 10 minutes, and they just really put the squeeze on that Mayo kick out. And Mayo were just... they were just a bit nervous at the end, and they couldn't get over the line. But, you know, something else with Meath, they played with a bit of an edge. It's good to see that. They're bringing that into their game. They know that teams are going to be after them, and they're going to bring it physically. And Vicky Wall is still the woman that keeps the wheel turning for them. You know, she only scored a point, but if you watch that match back, she was absolutely incredible. And it's a big task ahead for Donegal, and Meath will go in as favourites. But a fantastic weekend of football, and, you know, two fully deserving wins for both teams.
Yeah, absolutely. That final on the 10th of April, we will be previewing in due course. And you mentioned Vicky Wall there, absolute warrior. Absolute warrior.
Incredible.
Just very, very briefly, Nadine, the Division 2 final, also fixed for Croke Park on the same day, will feature last year's runners-up Kerry against Armagh. Armagh were the first to book their place in the Lidl National Football League Division 2 final, thanks to a comprehensive 7-18 to 1-9 win against Laois at O'Rallaghe Park in Cavan on Saturday. Kerry joined them after they got the better of Monaghan on a 114-111 scoreline at Tuam Stadium today. I suppose my question is, could we see any Division 2 teams make a real impact come the summer, perhaps?
Yeah, 100%. The two teams you just mentioned there. You know, Armagh have been thereabouts, their defending Ulster champions. They've Amy Mackin, who's in the top five players in the country. They've cruised through this Division 2, and they had a sticky Division 2 last year, actually. So they've definitely primed themselves for a run at that All-Ireland. Kerry have been knocking on the door, getting back up to Division 1. You know, Meath beat them in the Division 2 final last year, which was a shock to many people. But again, Kerry have great players. You know, there's Anna Galvin, there's Louise Muirhertig. They've brilliant, brilliant forwards. I'd see Armagh more so than Kerry, maybe putting a squeeze on that All-Ireland run. But that final will be excellent as well. And the two games actually are on in Croke Park. We'll preview them in a couple of weeks, but definitely watch out for Armagh. Caroline O'Hanlon's back this year, which is wonderful to see. And they could cause a few shocks, depending on what group they go into. I wouldn't like to be coming up against them.
Yeah, no, certainly will be fascinating to see how that one goes. It's Meath's first final since 2006.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it
amazing,
when I read that fact.
Amazing.
So, Plenty of drama in the ladies' football, and Aoife Murray, plenty of drama in the Camogie last weekend as well. I suppose let us start with a pointed free from Rebecca Henley in the 8th minute of injury time, giving Galway a 1-point win over a heroic and heartbroken Tipperary in the Little Woods Ireland Camogie League in Ballinasloe, an outcome that sends the Westerners through to the Division 1 final. So plenty of drama to see the current All-Ireland champions through.
Yeah, and you know, not just at the end of the game as well, obviously Tipperary having, I think it was Casey Hennessy sent off early in the first half, which I think was probably I suppose the start of the downfall for them, even though they fought right to the very end. I think they can be very proud of the work ethic, and I think obviously I always say that's something you can't necessarily coach either, so I think from that perspective Tipperary will walk away from the game quite proud of maybe where they came from in the league, but unfortunately they're still not going to have a final to show for their efforts. I know there was a lot of talk about the free at the end, but in particular I think the biggest error was the sending off. I didn't see what she did. I can only take that she retaliated, but she retaliated to an action. And that's the bit that gets to me when I watch back and see Dermody, the referee, send off a Tipperary person. I think if one red card is shown, two red cards have to be shown for that incident. And I would question the lines person, what advice and what did they see? In fairness to Dermody, they're meant to be their second pair of eyes, but if there's one red card, there should have been two red cards shown. And I think Galway got away with it on that occasion.
Yeah, it's unfortunate given the drama that unfolded and the manner in which they got that we're talking about referee decisions. But unfortunately, that is the case, and you know, it's absolutely right and just to do so. It was dreadfully hard on Tipperary. You know, they pushed Galway all the way in last year's championship semi-final, and having previously done the same in the penultimate stages of the league against Kilkenny, I mean, how will Tipperary recover and respond from this?
Look, I think there's massive learnings for them, and I think it can be. I would hope for them it could be the catalyst to maybe putting an extra bit of steel in them for the championship. And you know, they can see just how far they've come. And in fairness, that last passage of play as well, I have to give massive credit to Galway, because you know we always say, in particular, we give forwards an awful doing as a defender. Where, you know, once that offensive play is over, you got to turn to defence immediately. And I have to give credit to Galway when Tipperary looked back at that last foul, and we can talk about the incident itself in detail. But you know, there was a poor ball to, I think it was to Áine Keane of Galway. It went over her head, but she didn't just stop and watch a Tipperary person get the ball. She defended, and in actual fact, if you look at the incident, in fairness to Galway, they effectively created a one-way pass for the Tipperary girl. One Galway girl on her left, another one on her right. She could only run straight. Sarah Durbin comes with all of her experience, stands in her channel, and actually, if you do look at it, obviously we have replays so I can look at it, drops the right shoulder ever so slightly into the Tipperary girl, takes the contact, falls back, wins the free. But that's experience, and it's cuteness. It takes cuteness to win games, especially close ones. And Galway used all of it on Saturday. So I think when Tip looked back, I do think it was a harsh call. If anything, the game should have been just played on, because it was so hard to call in real time. So they will feel hard done by. But I think when Tipperary looked back, if they can start getting that little bit of cuteness into their game, they'll go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Very briefly, because unfortunately we are pushed for time. Obviously, we'll be Cork versus Galway in the final on the 9th of April, and we'll be previewing that one in due course. We mentioned the ladies' Gaelic football final will be in Croke Park, and there was a Camogie match in Croker last weekend, Dublin marking their first senior appearance at GAHQ in 11 years, and concluded their Littlewoods Ireland Camogie League Division 1 campaign with a memorable 113-6 points victory over Down. How impressed were you with Dublin, and are they closing the gap somewhat?
Look, I think when you compare the quality to the game on Saturday to the game on Sunday, I still think there's a massive gap between both of those games. I think it was great to have it there, in particularly for teams like Down and Dublin. I think it's great that they get their time in Croke Park, and maybe it'll whet the appetite and help them on their progression. But the quality, the difference between the quality on Saturday's game to Sunday for me was quite obvious. That's no disrespect to both teams. I think when Dublin look back, they'll be delighted to get the win and have had a relatively good league campaign. However, you know, when they look at their shot selection, some of the decisions that they made on the ball, there is a lot of work there for them. But hopefully getting that time in Crow Park will only make them more hungry for maybe better days in the summer and getting more hours there. But look, again, I just think that gap is still there for me. It certainly wasn't narrowed at the weekend.
Okay, good stuff. Nadine Doherty, Aoife Murray, thank you both very much. Stephen Higgins is up next on tennis.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Tennis.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game On this Wednesday evening. Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View joins us now to chat tennis. And Stephen, I suppose only one place to start. World number one Ash Barty has announced her retirement from professional tennis at the age of just 25.